Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Studio W, the Buzz, your global radio network. We circle this thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with the finest in broadcasting anywhere around the world. And now it's time for EAW, Eden as an Act of Worship, with your host, Ann Wooten-Taylor. And she's got a special guest, Dr. Charletta Berenger-Brown. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty terrific.
All right.
Awesome. I hope everybody's being safe with these storms.
Yes.
We're okay here.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
You're having storms out there in Arkansas?
We had sirens going off last night, and I know that in out west it was really bad, and it's been kind of moving towards the east. So I hope everybody listening, wherever you are, that you are safe and well, and that you're getting ready for the big day. So if you have not recalled that Valentine's Day is coming up,
yes,
do ma'am and sir, go get your boo something so that you won't have problems.
I thought you were talking about the Super Bowl.
Well, the Super Bowl is tomorrow. you definitely want to get something if your boo's team does not win. They will need something to make them feel better later in the week. So I would suggest you get started. William, did you go get your boo her present?
I plead the fifth.
Oh, okay. Well, you might want to plead some money to one of these stores.
You know, and I there's somebody at the door. I'm going to need to leave.
Yeah, I would hate for you to be all upset next weekend when you come on the air because somebody's mad.
Like I said, and I have to leave. I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Ann Wooten-Taylor, the CEO of Eating as an Act of Worship Ministries, and this is the Eating as an Act of Worship Ministries radio show. Eating as an Act of Worship Ministries is a nonprofit organization. We teach the biblical principles about the body, dieting, exercising, and maintaining a healthy body for the glory of God. We do that through our 12-week health and fitness course, which is coming up again in August, so you got about 6 months to get ready for it. Classes are going to start this year on August 19th, and so we'll let you guys know when you can start signing up, but keep that in mind so that you can participate, okay? All right. I know you guys who listen on a regular basis are ready for this week's motivation. You know our weekly motivation is designed to encourage you to stay the course if you've been doing well on your health and fitness journey. If you've fallen down somewhere along the way, we want to encourage you to get up, try again. And if you haven't been able to find a reason to get motivated to take charge of your health and fitness, we want to motivate you today through Christ. So today's motivation is entitled, Stand Upright. Have you ever had a problem that seemed like it would never end? For example, did you lose your job and you couldn't get another one for a year? Have you and your spouse been going through the motions and appear to be heading for divorce? Have you been sick with an illness the doctors can't even diagnose, let alone treat? And you know without doubt that you're only alive by the grace of God? If so, you're not alone. During the Great Recession, my husband was laid off for 14 months, but God blessed him with a job right when we used the last of our savings. Wow. Likewise, the first few years of our marriage, you know, the enemy tried us. Had us wondering if we were going to make it, but we're not only still together 24 years later, but our marriage is also much stronger. In fact, we're more deeply in love with one another now than we were back then. Then in 2009, I became ill and I could have died. I learned the scariest thing a doctor can say is not that you have a terminal illness, as I expected to hear, but hearing a medical professional acknowledge that I had a condition she couldn't diagnose was much worse because I was in a fight with an unidentified enemy for 3 years. On top of all that, I spent over a decade of my life ensnared by the sin of gluttony and unable to get free from it in spite of the time, money, and energy I spent on diet pills, gym memberships, diet gimmicks, and weight loss programs. As with me, your circumstances are probably accompanied by feelings of loneliness. You think no one understands or cares, so you suffer through it on your own. However, the Bible makes it clear that what you're experiencing is nothing new. In Luke chapter 13, verses 10 through 12, there was a woman who'd been under attack by an evil spirit for 18 years. The unclean spirit caused her body to be bent over in a hunched position, preventing her from standing up straight. You may not have the visible physical manifestation of the demonic attack in the same way the woman did, but the enemy has been waging a long-standing battle against your finances, your family, your health, and your physical fitness nevertheless. Moreover, the battle has crippled you, leaving you bent over in shame and defeat, unable to walk upright in victory. The Lord has already promised you an abundant life through Christ, and abundant living includes being healthy and physically fit. However, just as the Israelites had to fight to possess God's gift to them of the land of Canaan, you too must fight for the promised land of healthy and fit for life. Don't be like those who fall dead of heart disease, anorexia, diabetes, cancer, bulimia, and strokes in the wilderness of obesity and eating disorders due to their fear, spiritual cowardice, and lack of faith. Put your war clothes on and prepare to fight. I encourage you, don't be afraid nor be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage. All you really have to do is show up on the battlefield. It's the Lord who will actually fight against the enemy and win the battle for you. For the battle is not yours. It was, is, and always will be a spiritual one to be won by the Lord. Regardless of the circumstances or how long you've been engaged in the fight, be encouraged today. The Lord your God, who is the Alpha and the Omega, has declared an end to the battle and crowned you the victor through Jesus Christ. As Jesus said to the hunched and bowed woman, I also decree over you and your circumstances in the name of Jesus. Thou art loosed. Hallelujah. If you trust God to loose you from your health and fitness struggles so you can stand upright in victory in the promised land of healthy and fit for life, purchase your copies of the Eating as an Act of Worship workbook and the Eating as an Act of Worship Ministry Seekers Edition online today at Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. In the books, you'll learn the biblical principles about the body, dieting, exercising, and maintaining a healthy body for the glory of God. Don't forget to read our weekly blog for motivation to stay healthy and fit through Christ. And yes, I updated it this morning, so you should have something new to read. Follow us daily on Facebook, Threads, LinkedIn, and Pinterest for recipes and diet and exercise tips. And tune into our syndicated radio show on iTunes, Spotify, The Narrative Matters, Studio W Buzz, and Victory KVDW 100.9 FM, 95.3 FM, and 1530 AM in Little Rock, Arkansas for interviews and health and fitness trends. Lastly, make your tax-deductible donation to Eating as an Act of Worship Ministries at www.eatingasanactofworshipministries.org. All right, everybody, that's your motivation to stay the course. If you've been doing well on your health and fitness journey, to inspire you to get up and try again if you've fallen down somewhere along the way, and if you haven't been able to get up off the sofa, take a walk on your lunch break, we want to motivate you to do so today through Christ. We hope and pray we succeed. All right, folks, we got a great show lined up for you today. We have with us a good friend of Williams, Dr. Charletta Behringer Brown. She's an educator who received her BA in psychology from the Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia, a master's of education in special education from Virginia State University in Petersburg, Virginia, and a doctorate in education and administration and supervision of special education from Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University, also known as Virginia Tech, in Blacksburg, Virginia, and a PhD in public policy and administration with a concentration in law from Walden University in Minneapolis, Minnesota. She served as a tenured professor, dean, associate dean, department chair, and director of research in the State University of North Carolina system and the Commonwealth of Virginia. Dr. Behringer Brown is the president and senior research analyst for Charletta Behringer Brown Consulting. She possesses over 25 years of experience in senior level management with local, state, and federal level agencies in the Commonwealth of Virginia and North Carolina. Dr. Behringer Brown is also a proud member of the Chesterfield Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. Incorporated. Welcome to the show, lady. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. Not a problem. It's good to see you again. You've been on the boys show a couple of times.
Yes. Yes. They always give me a run for my money on that show. You know, they try to do the deep dive on me and try to, you know, I open up a question and here they go. You know,
okay. Were you shocked?
Well, I really wasn't. That's why I always like to do it, because I really like talking with the young people. And I really mean that, because it's interesting how they view things.
Right, right.
Just from their experience, like limited experience. And then they ask questions that somebody who may have 10, 20 years of experience may not ask. So it's always interesting.
Well, thank you. Yes. I appreciate that. I'll have to tell them that.
Yes. Because they were like, okay, well, we talked about the problems. How do we fix it? And I like this. I like it. I like it. Yes.
Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. Well, lady, tell us about your love for education. How did you come to want to be an educator, because a lot of people, I think, need to know that this is a gifting that they should have, not necessarily just, you know, I need a job, I'm going to do this.
Exactly. And it's exactly well put. The fact of the matter is that I came from a family of roundabout educators. My mother was actually a math teacher that then became a statistician with the federal government. Wow. And then an administrator. So, and then I had cousins who were in administration, were school principals and teachers to begin with. And so I had a love of both, quote, the engineering, the mathematics, and just the education, the aspect of psychology behind me, in addition to law. And so I decided that I wanted to become a teacher, because I said, well, you know, I like this, but I went the back door route, meaning that I worked at a juvenile correctional facility.
Wow.
And yes. And as a woman, as a short person, I was not on the unit with the boys or anything like that. I was in the control center, but the school principal would come through every day. And she asked, well, you know, I told her, well, if you ever have any openings in the school, I'm earning a, you know, psychology degree. And she says, you know, let me think about it, see if anything, you know, opens up. So then she came back to me a few months later and she says, I have an opening. And she said, you said you're a psychology major, right? Asked my transcripts, and I became an educational test evaluator.
Wow.
And so I was a part-time educational test evaluator while I was earning the psychology degree. Then I worked at VCU, which is the Medical College of Virginia, VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University. And I worked with a world-renowned doctor who wrote the book on melatonin miracle.
Wow.
And his sister was a special education teacher. So I had an opportunity to meet her and talk to her about it. And I worked at the only special education facility in the Commonwealth of Virginia. So that lended itself to working in correctional, alternative, public, 2-year and 4-year institutions. So I tell people, you're not going to find anybody who has worked in every facet of education to give you an eye view of what really exists.
I used to represent the state in child abuse and neglect cases, and very often those, you know, children had compound issues, and some of them had to be educated in the juvenile justice system.
Right.
You know, it's, people have negative views of our educational system as it is.
Yes.
But can you explain the difference between what it's like to be educated through juvenile justice versus the public school system? Because I don't think people really get that.
Well, I'm like, again, when in working in the juvenile correctional facility, I know this is, it's things that we don't want to talk about or the public doesn't want to talk about. And it didn't really hit home with me until something happened, meaning that I had a home that I owned. Now, I wasn't living in it, but it was broken into.
Right.
And even though I worked in the juvenile correctional facility, I can always remember one of the guards where this young man was brought to that particular facility. And he said, wait a minute. When they read the record, he had carjacked his mother in Norfolk, Virginia. Okay, you can ever believe that. So the student had to be transferred to another facility, because how would you like to come to work and this is the person who carjacked your elderly mother?
Wow.
And so basically, but my thing is this, I worked with kids that you would hear about in the news during that time frame that had killed their parents. Okay. had gone across country on a spree, meaning took the family car with their boyfriend or girlfriend, went across country and had killed their parents.
Right, right.
Had committed all kinds of crimes. Mm-hmm. But I saw them as youth. They were youthful offenders.
Right.
Never had one problem.
That's a blessing.
Never had one. And I tell people, I am somebody who is not threatening in stature. Mm. But I told them
that you have a big presence.
Exactly. And that's what I tell them. I said, you have to demand and command respect, meaning that you respect them no matter what they've done. They will respect you, because even though they may have had those situations at home, in the community, or wherever they've happened, every student did not commit those type of crimes.
Exactly.
There are actually some kids, I met girls that were in the facility because they were getting sexually abused at home and knew just enough to commit a crime for somewhere safe to go.
Wow. And to think that that's safer than home is so sad.
It's safer than home. And when you read their record and you actually talked to these young ladies or males, you found out that that facility was far safer than the situations and things that were going on in their home life. These were things that I had never encountered. These were things that I was not exposed to. But I worked with those students. And like I said, again, I did not have one problem. In fact, when I used to go to work, even with the side of working before I got into the school, I would always have them remark and say, oh, I'm glad you're working today because we don't have any problems.
Right.
You know, I would talk to the kids just like anybody, just like a regular, you know, just like they were regular, they had not committed a crime. Then I worked in alternative education, which is when you are then, basically the route is that you start off in public school or private. You know, those are your two choices. You start off in public or private. Then you go to either a therapeutic day school, depending on if you have a disability or just some other situation or another placement, as it were, outside the school. Then you go to, after that therapeutic day school, if you do commit a crime or something happens, you may go to an alternative school. Therapeutic and alternative are kind of similar. Then if something happens, you then may go to a juvenile correctional facility because the behaviors or the situations have gotten so that they warrant that you have been, you know, cited in some way. You go to corrections. Well, I started the opposite, meaning that I started in corrections, then worked in alternative, then went to public, and then so on.
I'm glad you mentioned therapeutic, because that was another one of the places that some of the kids had to go to. And because this is a health and fitness show, I don't think people realize that you have some kids who have mental health or other types of issues that need an educational system that's not necessarily part of the public education system.
Right.
Let's just put it that way. So can you describe, you know, for those who may not know what it is, or, you know, parents who are having issues with a kid and need to know that there are these kind of resources out there, what a therapeutic educational environment is?
Certainly. Especially with the advent of COVID, a lot of children are not used to going back to the schools in general, but therapeutic day schools exist because there are mental health challenges that exist, and people do not really want to focus on that aspect of it. I tell people, Charles Manson was a baby at one time. He was in elementary school at one time. Jeffrey Dahmer was there too.
Right.
He was in elementary. He was a little baby too.
Exactly.
People don't even talk about that because they're like, oh, those are the babies. People know every year that they're moved to the next level because nobody wants to deal with it. But a lot of the time, once they get to a therapeutic day school, then even at the therapeutic day school, if the staff don't have the training to deal with the children, then they want to send them someplace else. Thus, the child may act up and then they're incarcerated.
Right.
But that shouldn't be happening within a therapeutic day setting, meaning that the treatment should be available, meaning that you should have the counselors, that you should have the parental involvement. Even if you don't have the parental involvement, say, for instance, if the child is in foster care and they're still receiving those types of services, we call them, quote, wraparound services.
Exactly.
Wraparound services are, like you said, from your standpoint, being the law enforcement, being, you know, being the person who is the probation person, being the person who is the counselor, the parents that are involved, meaning even the guardians that are involved, having them all a part of the process to help the whole child become better. We're not saying that everyone will be perfect, but helping the child to have those coping mechanisms so that they can function in a more normal or generalized environment. And that even means once they, you know, complete their treatment, that they can go back to the public school or the private school and be successful, that they can go on to employment, or they can go on to a trade, or even the military. A lot of time what stops students when they've gone through the therapeutic day is that they're not taking them into the military because of the level of medications they have been on. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of different issues within that, but the therapeutic day school is the next step directly outside of the public school center that is paid for by generally state and federal funds to assist that child to get back to the public schools when they don't have a placement available or the level of services are not there.
So explain, you know, for people who are wondering, is this something that my child needs? What type of, you know, what type of, issues or,
certainly, basically, should they look for? Sure. When, okay, say for instance, if a child has been diagnosed, number one, as having special education needs. Say for instance, there are a lot of disciplinary issues that continue and exist after a certain point. Behavioral plans have been put in place. RTI has been used. No benefit from that. Things are just not happening. Even with the wraparound services that the public school is providing, even if they're not at the public school, they're in a private school setting, and the private school cannot provide those type of services because they're too intensive. If you go on that route of the disciplinary actions that are not related to the disability itself, meaning that they know it's a byproduct of the disability, it's not just the kid just acting out, and they know that it has continued, and they know that the services are not able to be provided in the public school, therapeutic day school may be the next option from you for you as a parent if you have a lot of disciplinary problems, and also if the behavioral supports are not working within whatever school-based setting they're in, meaning that they're levels above what the public can provide comfortably for that one student. You may need to check out if the school system is willing to provide that within a therapeutic day setting.
So this isn't like them going to a facility and living there.
Yeah, they're, no, they don't have to live there. I was even a state supervisor years ago of facilities that were in, I'm in Virginia, but in Chesterfield County, Richmond, Petersburg, and Hopewell. And basically the school, the home school pays for the therapeutic day services, meaning that the child goes the regular school day to these settings all around these areas, and then they go home in the evening. Some of the children did not return home. They actually went from there to a group home setting, even with early elementary from ages 11 on up to 21. They did not go home. They went to the group home after the school day was over. But many of them went straight, they went home.
So how would it be determined if a child needed to just do it? Therapeutic day setting versus a group home.
The manifestation determination hearing would help with that. Meaning, again, when I say wraparound implies all, like the, as we say, in a lack of a better way to say it, the village.
Right.
Social worker, your parents, the school, the school administrator, your teachers, when everyone decides, and depending on the age of the student or even the maturity level, I say, of the student, even you could be in elementary school and you know that you've got some issues, but you know that you're maybe 9-10 years old and you say, well, I don't feel comfortable here. I need. And then you're tested, you know, the placement is looked at, the setting is reviewed by all players. That may be a setting that child needs. And players must be a part of that from, like I said, from the manifestation determination hearing, all players are involved. And then it's determined after certain levels that, yes, this is a proper placement for that child.
So our parents who really need this help for their kids, do they have to pay for those services?
No, most of the time the home school will pay if it's something that they cannot provide. Rarely do they want to provide it because it is an additional cost on the school district. That's why they fight you not to do it. And when you, like, say for instance, if you have a child in the classroom that's acting out in every way possible, distracting from other students getting proper education, acting out in a violent manner, therapeutic day may be determined as the proper placement for that child to get the proper services, to be part of groups, to be part of self, you know, anger management groups, you know, other things going on in the home that may need to be discussed, counseling that may need to be provided, but just providing those supports in another environment is what the whole group would decide that child may need.
So if you're, you know, you said they fight you on it, how does a parent become the best advocate for their child to get
learning
this
order. The laws, learning what is available, also understanding the IEP process. That is something that a parent can do on their own. But what ends up happening is that they work many hours. Many parents work. I mean, for me, I understand when parents would come to me, and they still do. They say, hey, I'm working 50, 60 hours a week. I've got four kids. We're doing the best that we can. But little Johnny, we don't know what to do with Johnny. Well, it becomes a time factor. It's not the fact that they don't care and they don't want to be involved. They're exhausted. They are, they are spent with the four kids that they have and the conditions they're trying to go, to go through just to put a roof quote over the children's head or over, you know, everyone, the family's head. And so a lot of the time they may want to be involved, but through time constraints, through knowledge and understanding. And also there are a lot of things that go on. I always want to be on the side of everyone, but sometimes the schools fight against the parents, meaning that they're like, Johnny doesn't have a name. I mean, meaning the parents don't have a name. They don't have a, they don't have, you know, any wherewithal with this. I'll pass by Johnny.
I'm not worried
about Johnny. Johnny will get through the best way he possibly can, or we just keep passing Johnny through until Johnny's just out of our hair. And so social promotion is just not an, social promotion is just the thing now. You just push children from the next level. They can't read. They cannot write. They cannot even function on a level that would be self-sufficient or self-reliant. And so they push them along, and then they're nobody's problem once they're out of your hair with, you know, with high school. But a lot of the time they don't help you. A lot of the time the principals or others make it very difficult for a parent to even get the information that they need.
I try to
guide parents to certain websites that are free. Take the time. I come to groups and I speak to them and I said, these are some of the things you can do. I've been doing this, I mean, literally from the time that I started. I said, look, I've gone to schools with parents for free. I haven't charged them a dime. Because I simply know what the school is pulling, for lack of a better way to say it. I know
exactly. Pulling.
I know it's not until a Dr. Behringer Brown pulls up. And they already said, well, who are you bringing with you? And then they find out the person, and people, everybody Googles everybody nowadays.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden you don't hear it. I had a student, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. He was in elementary. Just a very brief story. He urinated when he was out during recess. Okay. And he did not, you know, it wasn't some kind of ogler type of thing where he was just out there just, you know, it wasn't lewd. And he was a elementary school age boy. Okay. He urinated at the edge of the playground near the woods, turned himself away from his classmates. It was not like he was trying to show himself in any way. Right. They wanted to suspend him.
Yeah.
Because the teacher would not allow him to go back in the building to go to the bathroom.
Oh my gosh.
So then the parent came to me, you know, a friend of mine actually told me about the story, and I said, wait a minute. You know, how, you know, what happened? I even asked the kid, well, you know, what happened? I went to the school with the parent. Needless to say, no more talk of special setting, no more talk of.
Praise the Lord.
Because why were you doing that?
Exactly.
And the teacher who happened to be there, she was like, the principal came to me after I spoke with her, two years later, and she told me, quote, she was one and done. We had to get rid of her because it was too many discipline referrals that were needless. And I said to myself, why would you do this to an elementary school age child who did not, you know, do anything that was lewd or do anything that was wrong?
He had just trying not to make a mess on himself.
Like, yeah, these are the things that we deal with in education with children across the board. That would have been a child that would have been in some other setting because they didn't want to deal with it. And it wasn't a behavior that was ongoing. It was a one-time occurrence.
Well, you know, I'm so glad you mentioned that because early in my career as an attorney, I did represent parents and their children in special education issues. And so you are so right that it's a totally different lingo that parents don't understand. Like you mentioned an IEP. Well, people don't know that's an individualized educational program.
Right.
And then you also have, the 504 plan. So for those parents who, you know, are listening and don't know this lingo, don't know if their child needs it, please explain the difference between those two and how a parent can tell if their kid even needs one.
Certainly. Well, a 504 is basically, in a lack of a better way to say it, so parents understand, 504s are generally temporary. Mm-hmm. Say, for instance, for example, if your child is diagnosed as having a disability, there is a process they have gone through to be diagnosed. It's not like, quote, the olden days where they say, okay, well, you look special.
Right.
you don't look right today. You know, we're going to go ahead and put I don't like that red dress you had on last week. Let's go ahead. No, they used to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, I had a dean when I was in college that told me, quote, and I'm 5'1", like I said, she was 4'11". Mm. And, you know, imagine how short she was when she was, you know, a child. They put her in special needs class because she was short.
No.
That's what they would do in the 60s, 70s, 50s. That's what they would do, you know? Mm. And so, but with that being said, the IEP means, again, the village. Mm-hmm. The village has been informed. They ask the parents, how is Johnny or Betty doing at home? How do mm-hmm. they act there? Mm-hmm. And the parent gives their report. The school counselor, the psychologist, they give a test, cognitive ability and so mm-hmm. on. Other different issues are reviewed. All of that. The village comes up with the response that this child needs special services, be it ED, LD, cognitive disabilities, whatever the case may be. They determine that. The 504 is different. Say, for instance, Johnny or Betty played a sport and they're in elementary, middle, or high school, okay? And mm-hmm. they break an arm or they break a leg. If I'm right-handed or left-handed and I break whatever hand I'm dominant on, the parent can qualify for a 504 plan for their child to be reviewed for that temporarily because they need those services because, again, they're going to need someone to take notes because maybe I broke my right hand. Mm-hmm. Maybe I broke my leg and I'm going to need help to get back and forth to class. Mm-hmm. That's what a 504 is for. It's a temporary disability or other disabilities that may be, say for instance, if you have asthma mm-hmm. and say for instance, you need certain supports, maybe you don't go outside during mm-hmm. certain seasons, you know, just mm-hmm. it's for something that's quote temporary or seasonal as it were. Mm-hmm. An IEP means that as long as you identify and diagnose that you need the services, you mm-hmm. are on an IEP. Can you ever get away from being on an IEP? Yes, you can. Most people don't do that nowadays. They will leave their child on until the child can make that determination themselves, meaning that if the child feels as though they've gotten to where they need to be, at least by the age of transition, which is mm-hmm. age 14, meaning mm-hmm. that 14 is where we say, okay, Johnny or Betty, what would you like to do when you grow up? You know, mm-hmm. so basically the child can determine if they feel as though that the supports have been added, they're good, they can opt out at a certain time period. But the parent mm-hmm. also has the right to say, no, I think Johnny or Betty needs to stay right on in there. So mm-hmm. IEPs are basically, they can go from whatever age of diagnosis on up to the time that you graduate. Mm-hmm. But a 504 is basically temporary, seasonal, or whenever it may be needed.
So do they both fall under special education or?
504, they both are services that are provided through the public schools, through the state and federal, but mm-hmm. IEPs are governed, but IEP is governed by Individuals with the Disabilities Act. Mm-hmm. 504 is basically Individuals with Disabilities, Americans with Disabilities Act.
Okay.
So they're two different things, but they cover similar pieces, but 504 is not definitely for your disability per se. It is just for a temporary disability, meaning it's different from the individuals with the disabilities. It's totally different.
So you mentioned testing. How does a parent go about having their child tested to see
you
if they-
You can basically opt in at a public school, wherever the home school is. Now I always try to use both as an example. The private school is basically outside of the home school setting. So the home school would be where you would start with that. Meaning that wherever the child is going to school, whatever locality, whatever district, you start with that district first and you say that I believe my child is having difficulty and they ask you, well, in what ways? And then that manifestation and termination hearing that then begins to maybe look at the certification process to see if your child is indeed someone who is even needing services. In whatever wow. area you have, in whatever areas that you have specified, meaning that you don't have to walk up as a parent and say, hey, by the way, I think my child is learning disabled. We wouldn't expect that. You know, we wouldn't mm-hmm. say that, oh, by the way, I think my child is emotionally disturbed. I mean, you may know it, you may understand it, but a lot of the time, truthfully, even when I was a classroom teacher at the K-12 level, what I noticed when parents would come in and say, hey, by the way, my child is learning disabled, or hey, by the way, my child is emotionally disturbed. Mm-hmm. Truthfully, they were trying to get supplemental monies when they would mm-hmm. come in with a full diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if a parent walked up and said to me, my child is emotionally disturbed. And mm-hmm. that's, you know, you start looking like, what is this? Or you see behavior changes, like the child was perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you see the child acting like you would, like on the drop of a dime, meaning mm-hmm. they were good. Then mm-hmm. Wednesday, all of a sudden parents come to you Tuesday saying, I think my child is emotionally disturbed. Let's start that process. And then mm-hmm. Wednesday, they're just, it's like, uh-uh. And I've seen it so many times through the years where there's a SSI stipend that comes along with that diagnosis of emotional disturbance. And they were not found to be emotionally disturbed. And you would have a child that you would build a close relationship with, and they'd outright tell you, my mama told me to say such and such.
I heard someone say that they had their wife had a child tell them something similar. Mm-hmm. And when it came to testing, it was sad.
But to your point, the testing actually, like I said, it originates with the home district mm-hmm. and you as the parent or even the teacher mm-hmm. along with consultation with the parent can say, I think thus, let's do the process. And mm-hmm. you go directly through that process. Meaning again, when I keep saying the village, it's just a short way of saying all the players are involved in the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. You start off with the parents giving their issues with the child, if it's going on at home or if it's just something going on at school, but mm-hmm. it's done where the setting at home is reviewed, the school site is reviewed, all the players are interviewed, and then the child is tested to see where they place cognitively.
So let's say we're talking about a kid who suffers from, you know, attention deficit disorder or ADHD.
Yes.
What would you recommend the parent do? Walk them through the process for those who don't know how to advocate for their child.
Certainly. When you're talking about, okay, say for instance, your child may have an attention deficit disorder. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you look at how they are attending, meaning when they're in your presence as the parent, are they not being able to follow directions, simple mm-hmm. directions, not complex directions, mm-hmm. simple directions. How is their attention span with you? And this has been exacerbated through technology, meaning mm. the scrolling or algorithms, meaning mm-hmm. that students cannot attend. We used to say everybody had a 15-minute attention span. Well, it's dropped from 15 down to at least 9 or 10 now.
Wow.
So it's decreased over years because of the use of technology. That's number one. So are they the average and we're just, you know, thinking that there's something else going on? That's number one. But the mm. parent needs to decide, how are they attending at home? What are some of the things they're having difficulties when they're in my presence? Because mm-hmm. ADHD is something that would occur everywhere, meaning it's not just, quote, in the school setting or the home setting. So mm-hmm. how are they attending at home when you're giving them activities, things to do? Can they follow through with it? Are mm-hmm. they, you know, where is their attention with that? So that's what the first thing. Then you're going to go again to the homeschool or your district level mm-hmm. office. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're going to start with your school. Okay. Then you're going to go to your school principal and the child's teacher. You're going to mm-hmm. have that discussion with them and say, well, how is my child doing? But the first thing would be, how is the child in school? Mm-hmm. The first thing would be with attention deficit disorder. Normally you pick up that from the teacher, meaning mm-hmm. working with the teacher. It's not just mm-hmm. something that the parent sees on their own. It would be mm-hmm. something that, say, for instance, the teacher is saying, not following directions, not being able to attend, not focusing, you know, they're, you know, at a loss for words. What are some of the things that where they're not being able to just really grasp the concepts? So that mm-hmm. would be the first discussion they would have with the teacher. After going to the teacher would then start that process. They have a certain amount of days that they have to do once the parent has come to them. So you always document by email. I don't like it when people say, oh, I don't care who you talk to. Date. I mean, you have to be very serious with people.
Right.
I mean, and I'm being honest. You have to, I don't want to hear this. Oh, I talk to, where's the documentation? Send an email. Everybody has an email. Okay, all the teachers have an email. The school principal has an email. Email them. Say, I feel as though on the last report card or during our last discussion, these are some of the things that I picked up on. What can we do about this? This has been an issue that I've seen at home. Then they have a certain amount of days to start that process. After going to the teacher will then speak with the school principal, and then it's set up from there where you all meet. You have a meeting with the parent, the teacher, the principal, whoever the special education person is for that building or for that district. They would also be involved. They would then start the process. They have a certain amount of days to cover. I think it's 10 to 15 days or so to get that ball rolling with the testing.
Now, you know, special education, as you mentioned before, it's not like it was when you and I were coming up. When I remember, you know, there was just this one little, usually like an aluminum shed type thing where all the kids were housed together. And there usually was a stigma when we were talking about special education, but now in the wake of, as you mentioned, IDEA, which changed, I think, the whole way special education is run, you get children who get to fall under that umbrella who don't necessarily meet that stereotypical idea.
I'll give you two examples. One is an ED. Okay. You would see this little girl. Okay. She was my student, at that time when I was teaching fourth grade. Okay. Just this delightful, cute little kid. I mean, just, you know, fun, you know, come over and, you know, just a sweet little girl. And what I noticed was that she missed a lot of school. I mean, when I say a lot of school. And I then said, well, let me set up a, you know, meeting with the parent to find out what in the world is going on, because the kid is, you know, a delight, never a problem in the class.
Right.
I said, why is this little girl not coming to class? Because if you think about fourth grade, she's not driving herself. She's not in high school. So what is going on here that she's missing school? I met with the mom. Then I talked to the mother. And the mother told me about how she was going to this particular doctor, and the doctor, she loved that particular doctor because the doctor was providing these medications. And then she talked about her sister. And it was a big case in this particular county about this, the mother's sister, meaning the child's aunt, had died 20 years prior to this.
Oh, wow.
And was raped and murdered.
Oh, wow.
And all they ever talked about that house was what? About that rape and that murder. So what do you think this little girl was this subjected to? Constantly. She wasn't even alive when it happened.
Right. And here
she is with the diagnosis of what? Emotional disturbance. Well, her mother was the one getting the medications for herself to take. That's why they love that doctor. So there are often a lot of different things that surround that, where meaning, again, like you said, the child didn't look it, the child didn't act it. But what identified it was that the child wasn't coming to school. Was a big major red flag. And so the other issues were the parents.
So it's not necessarily just a child with developmental delays, or kids in wheelchairs.
No, but absolutely not. Absolutely not. I had a child. Then I had, out of that same classroom, I always remember, he was not even reading on level. By the time we finished with him, he had an IEP. He got an IEP. By the time we finished, he was reading two grade levels ahead, but he also tested to be gifted. Exceptionally gifted. And that teacher in the classroom, like you said about the stigma that used to exist, well, by the time we were here at the, you know, the new millennium, the teacher was an older teacher that I was partnering with, because you have a, you know, special ed teacher and a general ed teacher. She didn't even want anything to do with him when he was an LD student. But as soon as he came back that he was exceptionally gifted, in addition to being LD, oh, she loved him. That she just wanted to, and I was like, you know, where are we going with this? I said, because he's the same kid that wasn't reading, and I got him to now read two grade levels ahead, and you wanted nothing to do with him until you found out he was exceptionally gifted, because she taught gifted ed students. And I said, you know, here we are with these type of issues or situations, but no, it is not children who are severe and profound. No, it is not. I mean, special education, I think people don't understand, encompasses everyone from severe and profound to the exceptionally gifted. And all in between in exceptional education. So it is totally different. And the stigma is not there in the same way that it used to be for people, say, for instance, like I said, from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, because we don't do that. You know, kids coming through get every possible service that they need to be successful.
Right. Right.
But what I think a lot of parents do not understand with special education is the fact that they're like, okay, my kid is now getting B's. Why are they not getting A's? Well, once they get to the A's with special education, you don't need those services anymore because you're on par with everybody else. And that's the difficulty that people don't get.
And from what I understand, the way that it works now is that, you know, the kids are supposed to be in a regular classroom, included as least, much as possible.
It's called least restrictive environment. FAPE. Free and appropriate education. Mm-hmm. Meaning least restrictive environment would mean everybody's in a general ed setting, regardless. Mm-hmm. And that was not like that before. Like I said, IDEA was placed and then you have all the revisions to it. But that's what the biggest factor or the biggest quote change from olden days would be, that kids are all supposed to be in the least restrictive environment. Meaning that, like we talked about the therapeutic day school, that should be the last resort when you're talking about for the public school setting. That should be the last resort. You should have those services in place in the public schools. What's happening now is that you can't find the personnel to fill them. You're putting kids in diagnosed areas where they're not even, that's not even the area. Meaning that when I was a teacher, just a classroom teacher years ago, I had colleagues that did not have endorsements in certain areas. So therefore I had to be their quote mentor teacher because I had an endorsement that covered the child that was in their classroom. Meaning that I was the consultant to that particular teacher so that it was legal. If you don't have someone with a certain certification teaching the children, even though they may be working on that certification, it's still not quote proper to say. So you need someone with the proper credentials to actually be supervising the person that's teaching that child.
Wow. So it's the reason, because I know a lot of people don't understand, well, why would you put a child who, you know, has developmental delays and with the rest of the kids
or
who needs, you know, in some instances, you know, help using the bathroom and with other kids.
Right.
Can you explain to them what the value is of having children included instead of being secluded in one environment together?
Well, the issue has been really what they wanted to do was we came out of a segregation type of thing. People always must remember every civil rights action in the United States came truthfully, off of African Americans in that way. Mm-hmm. Everything that translated came from those granting of civil rights. Mm-hmm. So everything, as they say, for lack of a better way to say it, rolled in on the back of the Civil Rights Act. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, you don't want to seclude blacks. You don't want to seclude others. You don't want, so therefore the mindset was that you put children in to have the social skills. You get people to understand everybody doesn't look or sound the same.
Right.
And that's why we try to use the least restrictive environment instead of a self-contained classroom. You think about, like I said, severe and profound. You don't have those many severe and profound students in a school district. So therefore, if you have just a setting for just those students, then that segregates them where you may have a class of 7 students. And there's no need for that. So you put them in the classroom so they're getting the social skills if they can. Even though they may not be, maybe nonverbal, they can still see if that's the
right.
case.
Right.
So they see other students. They can interact with other students and children get the opportunity to say, well, I was in class with this particular student and I understand that, or I have a neighbor who has this disability, or is this a better understanding overall is what the thought process is. So that's why if you have 3 students in a school that may be severe and profound, they're all included in the general education setting. Number one, it's cheaper. I'm putting things out there that the school system would never tell you, but it's cheaper. Mm. It's more expensive to have a specialty teacher for 7 students. And then now we've gotten to the point that if you think about students that are extremely disabled and they have a special setting, you have an itinerant teacher going from place to place. Mm-hmm. Instead of the 3 teachers that you would normally have teaching each group, you have someone going from place to place teaching those students or the services following the student. Now you have parents who are having to literally drive their children to that location to get those services if they decide to, because there are just those few of those students.
Wow. And one of the things I think a lot of people don't understand, like you said, the kids can see, the kids can hear.
Yes.
So even though, you know, they may not never reach what most people would consider normality,
yes,
they are still able to grow and develop.
Exactly.
It helps them, yes, to be included with the kids without disabilities.
Yes. One of my first jobs in education, I also was a substitute teacher in, mm-hmm, a severe and profound class at a high school. Mm-hmm. And I talked to the kids just like I would talk to any kid or anybody. Mm-hmm. And people are like, you're so good with them, because I'm going to treat them regardless, just right, like anybody else. I had a student that was in a class. By the time I was an administrator, I had a student that was in a class, and he was severe, mm-hmm, and profound, but he was cognitively disabled. And we, mm-hmm, used to say mentally retarded. We don't say mentally retarded anymore, but he was cognitively disabled. Mm-hmm. He would come out into the hallway every morning and scream.
Mm.
I mean, like, every morning. Mm. And so I walked up to him one morning, but I was an administrator by that point. Mm-hmm. I walked up to him and I said, do you know how you sound? Mm. What's that about? And, mm, I did it. I said, mm, like he would do. How, right, about, he looked at me, he laughed. By that classroom again. Because he said, this lady obviously is as crazy as I am. And I don't mean crazy with a disability.
Right.
I mean, it's just like, okay, well, she's not taking any from me. So, right, I'm not going to do this anymore. Somebody else could have done that well before I did that. But, exactly, nobody treats anybody the same. It's like, mm-hmm, oh, they have a disability. You got to treat them a little bit. No, you don't. They, mm-hmm, hear, this student could hear and see me. And he, mm-hmm, knew better. He stopped, mm-hmm, it. He stopped that behavior because he knew it sounded ridiculous.
You know, we've talked about different aspects of the educational system that, you know, can help children who have, yes, you know, physical disabilities, who have emotional or mental health disabilities. What do you say, you know, to parents who may be at their wit's end and, you know, don't know what to do? You've given them a lot of information, but, yes, maybe they're still feeling a little overwhelmed.
What I would say to them is, do not give up. Put everything in writing. I don't want to hear any talk about this. I talk to,
mm-hmm,
even when you talk to somebody, get the time. We know that we are bombarded. We know that we've got to sleep, but send an email. Mm-hmm. If that person does not respond to you, do not be afraid to go to the next level, but get that person time to respond to you. If you have written an email, don't think it's going to be instant messenger when somebody's, mm-hmm, working during the day. And then they don't get to you within, I said give everybody at least 48 hours, unless it's an emergency situation. Give, mm-hmm, everybody at least 48 hours or a little bit longer, even 3 days at the, mm-hmm, most. But if they, and then especially don't email somebody on a Friday and say they didn't respond to me over a weekend. Be reasonable.
Right.
But make sure that all of your concerns are always in, mm-hmm, writing. So, mm-hmm, there's a paper trail. Again, mm-hmm, as a parent, if you see that there's something going on with your child, approach the teacher. Give, mm-hmm, that teacher opportunity to respond to you. Ask for examples of what's going on in the class and say, what are our next steps? And, mm-hmm, put that in writing. You don't have to articulate it perfectly. Just say, this is what my child is doing. What can we do? What is our next step? That's it. Mm-hmm. Then let them respond to you. If they don't respond to you or give you a response that you feel as though that's appropriate, then you can go to their department chair, mm-hmm, or whoever the next person is after the teacher. Don't skip directly to the principal. Whoever, mm-hmm, the next person is. Most of the time with your schools, it is listed right there under staff directory. Okay. Mm-hmm. Go to your teacher. If they don't want to give you any information, then go to the next step. If that next, mm-hmm, step is the assistant principal, go to the assistant principal and say that I emailed so-and-so on this date, did not get a response. What are my next steps with this process? I feel as though my child needs this. Mm-hmm. If they don't do anything, the next step is your principal.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't do anything, you need to go to the county. You, mm-hmm, have specialists in every area with the county. Go to the special education director and leave a message. By the time, if you're getting to a special education director and your child is either in special ed or not special ed and they haven't responded, then you know that the next step, you need to go outside, you need to go to the superintendent's office and you need, mm-hmm, to say, these are the steps I followed. I need help.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, you're going to get some help between the principal and the director if, mm-hmm, you don't feel comfortable with what the teacher has provided. But you need to be able to follow through with each step. Also contact your state's special education and disabilities office.
Right.
If you're not getting anything from your district, go straight mm-hmm. to them because they have liaisons that can help you there immediately.
Mm-hmm. And you can even, I used to file complaints on behalf of parents whose children were not getting the services that they needed. So
exactly.
There are advocacy groups in your area that can help you.
Exactly.
Something like the Disability Rights Center.
Exactly.
Places like that where you can get, if you still don't feel comfortable doing it on your own, well, you have someone who can help you. Sometimes
PTAs, other parent groups.
Yes.
They all are available and ready to help you. Mm-hmm. It's been my experience. I'm even speaking to the General Assembly here in the Commonwealth of Virginia on Monday about several different issues and bills that are being put forward that I was asked to speak on just from background experience. Get out, be a part of the process. I know, like I said, I tell people, you may be exhausted, but you don't know what tired yet is. You need to just try to continue to get that strength to help your child, because if you don't advocate for your own children, who else will? Exactly. And that's what I tell people. A lot of parents, believe it or not, do not want the best for their children. They have to be shown that their child can actually do it. And that's a sad case of affairs, but I actually dealt with parents like that. You got to be your child's best advocate.
You do. You do. Dr. Behringer Brown, you have been such a wealth of information. I mean, it's just been pouring out of you like lava from a volcano. You just can't help it. And I appreciate it because, I know for a long time, even after I stopped, representing, parents whose kids had disabilities, that people would still call me.
Exactly.
For assistance, exactly. Because they just felt like they were at their wits' end.
Yes.
And, you know, that sometimes they had people who meant well, because I truly believe you have to be especially gifted to be a special ed teacher.
Yes.
Because it can be overwhelming.
Yes.
And so it would be difficult, you know, for parents to get what they needed and to understand the whole process. So thank you for taking the time talk to our listeners who may have kids with mental health or physical issues. Like, you know, for instance, it could be something as simple as your child having a lisp and needing a speech pathologist.
Exactly. Audiology. Exactly. This is a variety of speech, hearing, everyone.
Right.
And those are the major issues. I was talking with someone earlier today about that, about American Sign Language and making that a language within the schools, as just like we talk about other languages, elementary school students learning, you know, as a language, so that we have more people in the field that can just step in and ready to go just to say, here I am.
Right. So thank you so much. For those who, you know, want to contact you or follow you on social media, tell them how to do that.
Certainly. I am on, I think, what is it? I'm on, Facebook under my name, which is Charletta Behringer Brown. You can look me up on Facebook and contact me through Messenger. You can also email me. It's my first name, charletta.behringer.phd@gmail.com. Again, that's charletta.behringer.phd@gmail.com or Facebook, Charletta Behringer Brown.
Thank you so much again. God bless you, lady, and you have a wonderful weekend, all right?
Thank you. You take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. All right, everybody. That's my time. I've got to get out of the way because it's now time for the Teens Talk Truth radio show hosted by my favorite young men on the planet, my sons AJ and Alex Taylor. They discuss hot topics affecting teens in our society today. And as Dr. Behringer Brown pointed out, you don't know what they're going to say because she's been on the show before. So you guys, stay tuned. You'll get to hear a replay of an old show, from the Teens Talk Truth radio show. And I hope your team wins the Super Bowl, whoever you root for. I don't really watch football the way I used to, so I'm gonna go for the fellowship.
I understand. You know, I love football and, but I'm teased a lot because I'll switch teams in a minute. So this year I didn't even have a team. So I could pick whoever I wanted And I've been accused of being a Fairweather fan or a bandwagon fan, and I don't care. I don't care. And I said this, and these guys are loyal. Oh, I'm loyal to my team. I said, well, when the last time they sent you a check? Send me a check, and I will be loyal. Okay?
William said, unless you're paying me, no.
No, no. And, you know, the funniest thing, the strangest thing about it, and I've been to only two professional football games in my life. And I promised that I will never go back to another game because by halftime, these cats were all, and women were all liquored up and fights broke out all over the place. I mean, everywhere. I was at a Raiders and, Denver Broncos, Raiders and, versus Denver Broncos. And, you know, everybody was pretty cordial during the first half, you know. You know, Raiders fans, teasing the Denver Broncos fan. They're going back and forth, you know, mm-hmm. talking. By halftime, they're fighting all over the place.
Wow. So this is going on at a professional game? What?
Oh, yes.
What stadium were you in?
I was in Los Angeles.
But it happens
all over. I mean, and it seems like they're getting more violent because people have gotten seriously injured at these games. Seriously.
Really?
Oh, yes. It happens all the time. That's all the time. I said, now, why in the world I'm going to spend my money, got bad seats, and then I have to worry about a fight breaking out? No.
Exactly. I mean, it's not worth it.
No, not at all. You get a better view on TV anyway. So.
You know, because you get, look, you get a close-up view, you get the instant replay, you get a lot of stuff from watching on TV. But I will say, when I was in law school, in Fayetteville, you know, we'd always watched, the Razorbacks on television. But when I went to a Razorback basketball game, mm-hmm. it was like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely amazing. I had a really good time. So Andre and I were dating at the time, but it was our, you know, dating anniversary. So I got him, tickets. So that he could go see the Razorbacks. It was either that or his birthday, something like that. And so he came up and we were walking to the stadium and this lady was just standing there holding up cash money. She didn't say a word. She was just holding cash. And, you know, Andre was on the phone telling his mama he made it. And I hit him and I'm like, oh. I'm like, look. How badly do you want to see this guy?
Really?
Davey looked at that money. He looked at me. He's like, you better get that money. We will go get some pizza and watch us. So needless to say, I got a good man with some comments. Praise the Lord.
Take the money.
That money. We're like, whoa, that's like, sister girl, that's like, oh, was it like $120, something like that? And I paid like $50 for the tickets. Dude, come on.
Oh, you made a profit.
Look, we had profit.
You made a profit. Oh, my. I don't know. I would have taken the money too.
So anyway, that's, look, my story on how that went. If you want to scalp some tickets without, I would definitely help you out. It's not that serious for me.
Hey, I heard that. But Ann, enjoy your weekend. We're off tomorrow on the Boomerang Radio Show.
Yeah.
Yes. But it's a pretty good year. I want to make this announcement. February the 20th at 7 p.m., I believe it's 6 p.m. your time, we're starting to, it's a relaunch of Groove Talk Radio.
Oh, cool.
And my fraternity, Groove, and my sister, sorority, Swing Five Swing, they'll be joining me. I have a co-host there. So we're uniting forces with the brothers and the sisters, and we're going to talk about everything that affects our communities, whether it's health issues, whether it's, employment, community, concerns and even voting rights and things of that nature. So it should be a fabulous show. Now, the first one coming up, it's funny that you and Dr. Brown were talking about, education and not only that, special ed. And, because our first guest, she, left her job and started, a daycare, and she deals with underprivileged children and things of that nature, you see. So it should be a very, very interesting show. Very interesting show. So, but the Boomerang, we're off tomorrow and, going to enjoy the game, you know.
Yes, I'm taking I hope your team wins.
Well, I don't have a team, remember? But I'm picking.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. You gonna, for who, you gonna root for whoever wins. So yeah, your team wins.
I don't care. But I did pick the 49ers, so they said I had to pick one, so I picked the 49ers. You know, and most people are going for Kansas City. And you know, there's hatred out here because Kelce, one of the tight ends for, Kansas City, he's dating Taylor Swift.
Right.
Okay. And White Ring Republicans are hating on Taylor Swift. Did you hear that?
Yes, they think that they're going to sway people to the liberal side. It's crazy. You know they're crazy. Don't listen to them. Those people are not right.
And you know, the scary part about it, it's not just a few people. We're talking about in the millions, millions of nut cases out here. Ah, oh, boy. Okay. Anyway, and let me get off this horse here. Hey, enjoy your weekend. Tell Andre and the boys I say hello. All right.
I will. All right. I will. God bless you.
Bless
Bye,
you, everybody. Darling. Bye bye. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Buzz Studio W, your global radio